This is London Calling.
You are listening to Thought and Leaders.
Right, well, welcome to a very special edition of Thought and Leaders. I'm coming straight from the most beautiful city, actually capital, in the world, which is Jerusalem. And the thing about Jerusalem is that it attracts every type of person to this place. It's like a magnet. And the people you meet in Jerusalem are always surprising and always a total pleasure to meet. Because for some odd reason, when people get here, they start talking. They start talking to complete strangers. And it's as if they've known each other all their lives. It's just something special about this place. And I started speaking to a gentleman. His name is David Roth. And he's here with me today. Hello, David.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello, shalom.
Shalom, as they say here. Right. Yeah, right. Shalom.
I'm good. Enjoying the morning. It's beautiful out.
Isn't it? I mean, look at that sun. I mean, well, just behind that cloud there. We're actually in a place which is in central Jerusalem. You can hear a little bit of a traffic at the back, which is near a place called Yafo or Jaffa Street. Now, David, your story is quite remarkable. You've seen the ups, you've seen the downs, you've seen the ins, you've seen the outs, you've seen the roundabouts.
Up, down, all around.
It's like a merry-go-round. You've even been involved. You were in Vietnam as well.
I was. I am a Vietnam veteran, United States Marine Corps. My tour of duty was 1965 and a bit of 1966 before I came back to the United States.
You were exposed to Agent Orange, is that right?
Yeah, we kind of went with the territory, you might say, at that time.
Yeah. What did you find out about people when you were there?
Well, I think, like in most human situations, you know, brings out the best, it brings out the worst. You know, I got to see some men that I served with at their best and at their worst. And, you know, I think there were certain lines or definitive things, such as principles that we were fighting the war for, apparently. And there were personalities, as in, these are the people you're letting run the show here. Come on. And I sort of felt that. I was a young kid, and, you know, what do I know? Still, what do I know? I mean, you know, these were some times, and I believed everything I had grown up with. I wasn't well educated. I had no real, you know, nothing to defer to other than, hey, this is the way it is. I grew up just an average white boy, you know, until we started talking religions and stuff like that. I was just your average white kid growing up in America, and as best I could and as much as I can remember, rolled with the punches, you might say.
Yeah.
You know? But so, I had a bit of problems as a youngster, and when it came down to either facing the music, I'm talking about, you know, legally, or having a choice, whether it be a juvenile lockup or going into the military. I thought military sounded like a pretty good option, I think. I think I'll try that.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
You gotta work for a living, and you know, I bounced around from job to job, you know.
Don't you understand what I'm trying to say?
And one of those jobs that you bounced into was you found your way into Hollywood.
I did. It was nothing that I had planned. It's something I certainly had thought about. There's not too many youngsters around, or even people that I meet today that weren't had some kind of an infatuation or some kind of desire to work in Hollywood, be amongst the stars. Yes, I admit to wanting that, but, you know, come on, it was a job. Who wants to go look for a job? But,
exactly.
But it came to me kind of in a roundabout way. I had a friend who I lived next door to as a kid in Venice, and I was on my way to Vietnam and to serve out my enlistment. When I returned from Vietnam, my friend and I got together again, and he had just been through a terrible injury playing pro ball. He had been picked up, I guess, in the draft, and had gone on to play for a university here, and then a professional football team here from California picked him up, and he played pro ball, and he was terribly injured, leg injuries, but at that time, there was a system in Hollywood, the star system, studio system, and he went on to become a movie star, groomed by a studio, and I went on to hit the streets, see what was happening out there in the world, and see what I could come up with.
Now, an important message from our friends, the Jordan Legacy.
This year, there has been a 40% increase in the number of adults thinking about harming themselves or feeling suicidal. Somewhere in the world, one person dies by suicide every 40 seconds. 75% of these will be men. During the past 12 months, 200 schoolchildren took their own lives. Most suicides are preventable. Will you support our mission to make deaths by suicide rare events? Discover more. Visit thejordanlegacy.com.
Things weren't going real well when I stumbled into my friend one day, and he asked me what I was doing, and that opened the door for me to get in as a movie extra.
Mm.
And, of course, I became a part of a crew that he was part of, the old TV series. We were partying together, and he just didn't last. He just couldn't make it, and he passed away.
Does Hollywood push people towards drugs?
There's been a lot of Hollywood celebrities, personalities, what have you, that have passed on because of drinking and drug use. It's the thing that, you know, takes out a lot of people in our time. It's not just, you know, the stars, and it's just they're a little more high profile and they get noticed more, but there are a lot of people that get taken out and lose their lives because of drugs and alcohol. And unfortunately, he was one of them. And I'm so sad. I was so whacked out at that particular time in my life that I refused to believe he was gone. I thought he would come walking through the door any day. It was just a terrible, terrible thing for me. But anyway, he had opened the door for me, and I went on to, get a little bit of work here, a little bit of work there, and, you know.
Because you went into the technical side, and you became a cameraman.
I did. I had been involved long enough that I could kind of figure out who's who in the zoo and, approach this person, approach that person. And
Do you think people today could do that? Because is it that you can't get in now unless you've got a qualification or what?
So I guess it's who you know and what you've done to a degree.
What about studying film and all that stuff? Does it make any difference or is it just like luck?
I would imagine a bit of both. A bit of both. I think if you're not a good actor, it's going to, if you're talking about that particular end of the business. If you're not a good actor, if you don't know your lines, I've had a couple shots at acting and it is not simple.
No.
It is not simple.
What's the hard thing about it?
Well, I think for me, it was remembering lines and expressions that have to be practiced and learned.
Yeah, yeah.
And just thinking of them in your head sometimes is not enough.
No.
There has to be technique and whatnot involved unless you're a natural. I've heard that term used, unless you're a natural. So,
in terms of naturals and in terms of amazing names from Glitterland, you've worked with Lancaster, is that right?
Lancaster? Absolutely. As I was doing, looking for different directions to go in the studio, once I realized I did not want to always be an extra, a movie extra or a stand-in, etc., I realized that what could I do? I'm not really well-educated. I got a GED when I was in the Marine Corps, and that's about as far as my education went. I was far too into drugs to continue with a college of any kind. But I finally arrived at a place through people. I emphasize people because for me, it was people that helped me. It wasn't the studio system per se, but people that had gotten their foot far enough into the door that they could keep it open long enough to slide me in there. And that's what happened for me. People that knew I had this buddy and I was good friends with him at one time helped me. But when I finally decided that I wanted to be a camera person and work in the camera end of the business, I had already met a few people and we'd hung out together and had long been friends, established friendships and whatnot. And I was able to be kind of guided in the right direction. And people held a few doors open for me when they should have been slammed shut. But they did it for me because they believed in me. And actually at that time, skipping ahead a little bit, I was on another path, and that was a path to improve my life and have a little more direction and a little more, little bit more of a spiritual end to my life.
So how did you come across Burt Lancaster then? How did you work with him?
Well, I had just, gotten a call from a show that a friend of mine was working on, and he managed to get my name on a call sheet or they're usually a call sheet requesting a certain amount of extras and a certain amount of, we'll need extra this, extra that for that day. And it comes out on the call sheet. But this particular day got a hold of the call sheet and got my name on the requests. Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas were doing a show called Tough Guys.
Uh-huh.
And I got to come in and be in a background player. An extra, if you will, for a couple days. So I got to see them in the flesh.
They're not getting older. They're getting tougher.
Let's go back to doing something we really like doing.
I'm waiting.
You mean like robbing and stealing?
Nobody robs trains anymore.
I'd say you've been misinformed.
as a cameraman, you've also worked with Burt Reynolds, is that right?
I actually worked with Burt for many years and, worked with the cameraman that Burt used. There is a difference between a cameraman and the other members of the camera team personnel. There's an assistant cameraman, and there's a camera operator, and there's a second assistant cameraman, and a film loader. It's all part of a team.
Exactly.
And depending on the production, some can do the same jobs. But for the most part, it's a camera team. And it wasn't until later on that I became part of a camera team. Then I started working with other people like Robert Mitchum on a TV series that he was starting. I believe it was called A Family for Joe. I think the network had bought maybe 6 episodes, and it was kind of fun because he was the kind of personality, the kind of guy that would shoot the shit with you. You know, he's one of those guys who was kind of like talking to the crew, at least in this particular show, and it was really fun hanging out with him and talking to him.
Specialist speakers make your next event
fascinating,
authentic, entertaining, insightful,
refreshingly honest,
totally compelling. Contact specialistspeakers.com.
I don't know how anybody's going to take this, but I have had an interesting life for me. Maybe others wouldn't find it interesting at all, but for me, I found it to be interesting. Have a lot more to do with what I was doing and who I am, and a different appreciation for the people I met along the way, and maybe a different attitude that might never have happened for me.
Do you think that the world is as tough today as it was then, or is it tougher?
I think everybody's looking for a little spirituality, I guess, or a little, you know, if I'm guilty of anything, yes, I wanted to feel good. And, but I think I really wanted to find a way that was comfortable, the way that I could deal with people and feel not less than or inferior to other people or be judge and jury of myself. That was something I was busy doing a lot as I was, you know, progressing up, living my life. But I think a lot of it has to do with, just trying to, make it the way that I could make it. But that's not really reality when you're using drugs or trying to figure out ways to get over on people or, you know, not being capable of being honest with yourself or others. You know, there was always is there an easier, softer way to do this? And if it's not going to get me what I want, I'm going to get out of here now. You know, I'll run from it or whatever. But for the most part, it's just been, suit up and show up, you know?
Yeah. And, I find that so many of us, you know, we start running, and sometimes I'm not quite sure where we're running to. And then one day we kind of figure out maybe we don't have to run. Is that what happened to you?
I think so, in so many ways, yes. I think I had to kind of just stand and hold my ground, admit my faults, and, get in with a group of people that were like me or, that were similar in attitude and states of body and mind as I was. And I think, I'm not a religious person, but I think that whatever power there is in this universe made that possible for me.
Yeah.
I certainly could not have set the stage any more perfect than it was set for me. This is all in hindsight.
Have you always been religious or what?
No. Oh, gosh, no.
Because you were telling me earlier a story that in Vietnam, when you were fighting the Viet Cong and people like that. Was it your sergeant? Was, you know, he was a pretty tough guy back then.
Yeah, he was.
And he was saying that, you know, you can go and go up front and stuff like that because you're a Jew and you've been wandering for 40 years, so you might as well do another 40 minutes.
I think he meant it in jest or kind of funny. But
there were Ku Klux Klan people.
Actual members of the Klan.
And how did they treat you?
They would call me these things like Jew boy. They'd never really made any fun of me. Or, you know, a lot of people call each other Jew boy or, hey, you know, fish head or whatever. You know, if you happen to be a Catholic or something, I'm sure there's derogatory statements if you take them that way. And I kind of felt a little bit as being included as one of the guys, the way they delivered a Jew boy, or let's get a Jew up here. He knows he can read a map. They wandered in the desert for 40 years. Guys, crap like that. But
do you think that today kids are too sensitive about everything? Like, you know, you can't say this, you can't say that.
You know, I'm who I am, and, you know, I am grateful to have found a God that I can believe in, a power greater than myself that I choose to call God, and that I can apply to any event I might be encountered with or confrontation I might be encountered with. But yeah, I can see how a lot of people would get, you know, find it, you know, an affront to have the bad rap because of their religion or the way they were born. We can't help that. It's a sad state of affairs that people have to use religion, because religion's got their hands kind of dirty in many ways as well, which is not my, you know, job to, you know, investigate one way or another. I believe what I read sometimes and I don't other times. And, you know, I think it's something that we all need to kind of take in for ourselves. I like to say my brother's a very religious guy, practicing religious person. That's what I'm doing here in Jerusalem.
I'm going to come to that. Why are you here, David?
I wanted to, my brother and I, it was his idea mainly for us to do something together. We've not done anything together as brothers since Vietnam.
Really?
Yes. He was leaving to go to New York to go study, and I was leaving to go to Vietnam to the recruit station downtown Los Angeles on 8th and Broadway. I was leaving that following morning to go into the Marine Corps, and we you know, we said our goodbyes and whatnot. He was picking up a car that he was delivering to somebody in New York. And that's how his end of that trip started and mine. And just never saw each other for many, many, many years. Talked to each other occasionally, but it was his idea. He said, let's go to Israel. Like,
wow. And, yeah. So what do you think? What do you think of Jerusalem?
I think it's a mind-blowing city. I mean, you know, it's incredible. You know, the architecture, the people, just the way it's laid out and the vibe. You know, and even you know, I kind of expected more. I thought, oh, hey, brother, welcome me with open arms. Some of these people just got a smirk on their face, and, you know, I'd like to boot them in the ass. Sometimes that's the way, you know, it seems to me. But, you know, they're living their lives, and I'm glad Israel is the country that it is today and that it stands for what it stands for. I'd like to see a real peace here at some time, but it seems like it's a bit bigger than me to figure out the answer to that. I do know one thing. From what I've seen and experienced here, I'm glad the Jewish nation exists, and I'm glad that the IDF is as strong, as powerful as it is. Thank God, because it's been no secret. Many people, mainly for all the wrong reasons, want Jews gone.
You think that's still the same today?
I think it is the same in some areas, maybe more so. And I'm glad that the land of Israel is a place that I don't think is going to sit by and watch that happen. I'd say that the Jews shouldn't be in any way, shape, or form hated for their beliefs. There's plenty of room in this big old world to be who you are and do what you want. Geographically, it might not always be the case. Downtown America in the Carolinas or, you know, in Georgia would be the best place to hang out your shingle and say, hey, new Jew in town, ready to give some instruction to you guys on how to run your, yeah.
A couple of streets away from where we are now, I saw the new American embassy, and it's got there that it was opened by Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Do you think that was a good move?
It just makes me want to throw up the way politics attempts to turn things upside down and shove it down your throat and all that. I can tell you, I don't like to be lied to. I don't care if it's a politician or, you know, a guy I've just broke bread with. I don't like to be lied to. And trust me, I know what a liar is. I've lied plenty in my life. So, you know, but so be it, you know. I mean, he's got his own agenda. And, you know, we ended up with the president that we have today. We're on some pretty shaky ground as a nation ourselves. And I think the United States has got to get its priorities straight. A lot of us may not like that, but if it's for the good of the nation, the good of our people, I'm all for it. I'm on board. To say I dislike that or I dislike this is my right. You know, what I can do about it usually is revealed somewhere down the line. But I just, I think the first thing, step into anything is acceptance. You accept it for what it is, what it might be, and the direction it seems to be going in. And if it's not going that way, or according to what your perception is, then, you know, get busy, get with the people that are trying to change it. Like-minded thinkers, for instance, they exist. We're not unique as human beings, I don't think. We're not unique, so.
You're blessed to have grandchildren.
I am.
Fantastic.
And they're not Jews.
And they're not Jews, fine. And would you encourage them to come over to Jerusalem at any point?
I would.
Why?
It's a place to see. I mean, that's like does it always have to be about religion? Does it always have to be? That goes with the territory when you're over here. That goes with the territory. If you can't see it, smell it, even eat it here because the foods are so good.
Yeah, they certainly are.
And, you know, just by some of the trips to the, you know, to the Dead Sea, to some of the historical biblical sites. I mean, everything here is kind of set up as a history lesson as well.
Yeah.
Everything is, you know, either self-explanatory, you'll hear it from another person on the street, or it's written in nice Hebrew and English letters.
It is, isn't it?
So that you can understand it.
Would you suggest to people that it's about living in now and not worrying about what might be or what was, and it's about now? Would that be the message that you would leave people?
Absolutely. Part of the message I would leave them, and I would also ask them, is there any more? Is there any more?
What do you mean up there?
Well, right here in the here and now. It's you and I, you know, conversing with one another, recording. We're in the moment. We're in the right now, in the here and now. There may be something bigger, but this is the only message I'm getting right now. It's we're here right now. And, you know, before 24 hours ago, maybe a little longer than that, we didn't even know each other.
True.
And what you were sharing about earlier, talking to different people, this seems to happen in this, if you open yourself up, you know, which I have a tough time doing, like, you know, I'm walking, you know, I can read somebody's face. I don't know, they might have just lost a loved one. And here I am being judgmental about them. I want to sock them up, you know, and I'm 75 years old. I'm only, anything gets socked up, it'll be me, you know. So it's life on life's terms. Easy to say, sometimes difficult to, you know, knock off the rough edges, but it's life. It's life and living life on life's terms. And, you know.
And when things go wrong in life, we try different things to get out of it, right?
Yes.
What would you say to someone who's right now going through a really tough time and maybe finding it, you know, well, the easiest thing to do is just reach for the booze or reach for the drugs or reach for the sex or reach for whatever it might be?
Well, in some instances, those things still work for people.
Yeah.
But if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, there are groups, organizations, fellowships, if you will, that help people. And, you know, now with communications being the way they are, it's as simple as punching in a website. How do I quit overeating? How do I quit using drugs? You ask the question, you'll get a million answers, and then you make the choice. I'm not one that's very trusting of people, places, and things, but today I'm a little bit more open-minded than I used to be about, you know.
What made you more open-minded?
I got my ass kicked by myself. Nobody has kicked my ass worse than I have.
Really?
So, you know, you find out a person has to hit a bit of a low point in their life if for the grace of whatever power that you might call it to come in and, you know, and help you get, lift you from whatever situation it is. For that moment, for that day, until you learn to accept and live yourself each day.
So true.
I see here in, you know, land of Israel, everybody's walking around, not everybody, of course, but men, women alike, walking around in their prayer garb or carrying their prayer books with them. And what am I going to say? That's their way of handling it. That's their way of doing it. It's been passed down, maybe in some cases, for generations. For me, but I can assure you, were it not for a power greater than myself, God, that I wouldn't be here in Israel today on this fantastic journey with my brother and having and being able to experience the things that I've experienced here. It's just magnificent. You know, what are you going to say?
What are you going to say? I agree.
What are you going to say?
I'll tell you something. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, David. And I just wish you well for wherever your journey takes you next. It's amazing that you and I have met here in Yerushalayim. What a place. And I just wish you well.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad to have had the opportunity to meet you as well. Thank you.
City of stars, are you shining just for me? City of stars, there's so much that I can't see.
Thought and Leaders is a Goodbye production. It is heard around the world, but we can't continue broadcasting without your support. If you are interested in sponsoring the show or are looking for award-winning content, including strategy and coaching, please DM us or email reinvent@me.com. That's reinvent@me.com.